Hey folks, and welcome to another episode of The Numbers Game. This is the show where we talk about the numbers that everyone pretends that they don't care about, share our own and the stories behind how we're trying to grow the own numbers within our business, whether it's content, SaaS, whether it's general startup growth. So we hope it's useful to you. And I'm joined, as always, by Matthew. How you doing, Matthew?
Thanks for inviting me on the show, Colin.
Again?
Delighted to be here. I'm going to pretend I'm a guest. No,
yes.
I'm supposed to be here.
Well, I'd just interview you about your breakfast that you were telling me about earlier on.
Yeah, we could do a series.
You've been raking
that.
The beach, haven't you, for your breakfast?
Seaweeds, garlics, mushrooms. Don't know if you get beach mushrooms right enough.
Beach garlic, maybe. Yeah, you could get some beach garlic. I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, well... Good start to the show anyway.
Yes, indeed. Talking about breakfast. Yeah, well, you know what it's like. Well, actually, this is a content-based show. It's about creating videos and podcasts and stuff. That's how we always start our interviews, isn't it? You ask about breakfast.
Good for setting the levels.
What is that? Do you think people started doing that just because everyone... Well, actually, so I was about to say, do you think it's because everyone has breakfast, so at least it's something everyone can answer? But then the whole thing with Tim Ferriss' show just now is that he's talking about the fact that nobody has breakfast. That's like the sign of a high performer if you don't have breakfast.
Apparently. Really?
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
I thought it was the opposite.
Well, supposedly, like...
I thought I was a high performer. I have breakfast.
Because you're now having good breakfast. Well, no, apparently it's... So I can't remember the stats exactly, but like a large proportion of the guys certainly on his show don't have breakfast. So he's taken that now as a trend that to be a high performer, you need to not have breakfast.
Well, let's get Ferris on. I'll be having words with him.
Exactly. And my stomach just rumbles in the microphone if I don't do that. So, yeah. Anyway, to the show. So this is episode 5 of The Numbers Game. And what are we doing? Well, we'll start with the story. I should introduce the show first. Just to remind you, the way this show works is you might either be watching the video, you might be listening to the podcast. We talk about the story behind what we're doing at the podcast host, as in what has happened in the last week that's notable, how we're growing the business, the shows that we run, the blog that we run, all of that stuff. We're sharing the story behind it and the stats as well. We're sharing as much as we can about the numbers behind the business to give you an idea of... You know, benchmarks basically of if you have this much traffic, how much affiliate can that generate? If you have these many clients, how much income can that generate? If you put out this much content, how much attraction, how much audience can that generate? So it's really to help you guys get an idea of a content business that's already in existence, what we're doing and how we're managing to grow that, the type of acceleration and scale you can get around that. And also experiments. So we're hoping to do plenty of experiments over the coming months around how we grow our own audience. And we'll be sharing what we're doing. Right now, of course, we're talking about email opt-ins. I'm going to tie that up today, actually. Later in the show, we'll talk about the end of the opt-in experiment and I'll share the end results of that. But first, we'll finish up. And this will be the last episode where we're doing the backstory. So from next week onwards, we're just going to be into our regular routine where we're going to catch up, see what you've been doing this week, Matthew.
I've been eating for breakfast.
The capers, yeah, exactly. basically, what's going on day to day, the backstory, the behind the scenes of what we do here and how we plan to grow it. So last week here of the backstory, tying up, basically catching up with... One of the big plans for the future really is the software that we're developing right now. I mentioned it a bit last week where we tied up to now around content memberships, but the other strand that we're looking at right now is software. So that's what we're going to look into this week in the story before we go on to lessons around that actually, around teams and around working with agencies, and then on to the experiments and the stats for this week. So I hope that sounds good. As usual, you can find the show notes if you want to get links to resources, to get a summary of this, to view the videos if you're listening to the podcast, or to find the podcast if you're watching the videos. You can find that at numbersgame.me/005 for episode 5. So join us over there for all the extra resources. But anyway, on with the rest of the content. Okay, so on this segment, we're looking into the last part of the story that takes it up to now, really. Last time around on episode 4, we explored where we're at now with content and memberships, didn't we? So we're up to how we've been thinking about putting out our blogs, our podcasts, our videos, and the refocus on the membership as well, going from Fan Fishing over to the Podcast Host Academy and how that changed exactly how it's delivered. So this time around, I want to talk about the other side that I hinted at last time, which is the software that we're looking at. And this really all stems around the refocusing, doesn't it? I mean, so we talked a bit about sacking clients before, didn't we? I mean, why did we do that in the end?
It just wasn't really scalable, was it?
Yeah.
And, you know, it ties you down doing just this same tie. You're not making any progress.
Yeah.
We wanted to make stuff, didn't we? We wanted to create, like, content ourselves.
Yeah, yeah.
So...
I know, it's like you're on a hamster wheel, isn't it? You're just like, you're either doing the client work that just never ends because it's a new thing every week, they send you a new audio file. And don't get me wrong, we enjoy doing this. We enjoy like editing podcasts. We enjoy working with clients. We enjoy teaching people how to grow their shows. But when it gets down to like some of the clients we work with just now, they know what they're doing, don't they? All they do is send us their audio files. We've already kind of coached them through how they'll grow it. They know what the process is. So it's just, I mean...
Yeah, when you've had clients for a long time, it becomes a well-oiled machine.
Yeah,
all the work
you hope
is in,
it does.
Yeah, all the work is in meeting a new client because everyone's different. You could have all the standard operating procedures in the world, but people are unique and there's going to be unique issues and unique needs. So
totally.
It could take a lot of work.
And that tends to be the fun bit as well, doesn't it? That first little while, even though it's a lot of work, it's the interesting part because you're figuring out the show, you're kind of teaching them a little bit, all that stuff. So yeah, I mean, that was what we've talked a little bit about this already. So that was why we made the decision to stop taking on regular podcast production work. So we still work with a few clients. So people that we know well, that we like, we liked all of our clients. It's not like we didn't like any, but people that, you know, we'd been working for a long time, the processes are down so well that actually it doesn't take up much of our time. So we kept on a few like that, but... got rid of the rest and stopped advertising production services. So nowadays, all we do, if we do a little bit of production, but it's mainly one-off actually, it's mainly bigger projects. So we'll work with some companies who come to us and say, we want to produce 4 or 5 episodes that do this. And it's actually going to be a fair bit of work because there's going to be some extra, it's going to be high production values, that type of thing. So we will take on some of that, but not otherwise, not really just the regular standard stuff. But the thing is, we still get asked about that all the time. So we wanted to produce something that helps them, a solution for those types of people. You know, it's our audience. They have this problem, they have this barrier. So we want to help them in some way around that. And that was kind of what led to the software stuff, wasn't it? So really, it just made me start thinking, can we produce something, a piece of software, a web app, a software as a service that makes it so simple and easy for your average podcaster to produce their episode? And I mean, 75%, 80%, 90%, most of the people that we work with, actually, they don't do a lot of editing. They don't do a lot of production. All they do is, there's maybe two options. Maybe they just... they pull out the recorder and they record something for 10, 15 minutes, just a solo show, and then that's it finished. All they have to do is add their branding and process it, make sure it's the right volumes. Or maybe they go out and interview somebody and they do their own intro and outro. Again, it's pretty simple though. The interviews don't tend to need much editing, maybe just a top and a tail. And then the intro and the outro, again, just a top and a tail as well. And you just piece those bits together, again, put on the branding and the processing. So there's not that much to it. And I wondered whether we could create something like that that would produce that really easily. Just push button, upload the file, press a button, and it downloads it or sends it off to publishing. I kind of thought that wouldn't be enough, though, to make it unique, because there are editing platforms out there. There's some platforms out there that do a few of these things, not all of them together, the branding particularly. But I'd been talking a lot about the content stack and something at that point. So... bringing in video or recording on video and producing stuff for YouTube and for podcasts and then pulling it into a blog as well. So that was the content stack and stuff that I'd talked about at ProBlogger, written about on the blog, talked about at Content Marketing Academy in Edinburgh as well. And it was getting really good feedback. People were really enjoying the approach. They were really, it was really resonating with them about as a way to, or the problem being that they can't get stuff out regularly and on all the platforms. So this is a way to solve that. So I started looking into plans for a platform that would allow that as well. So it would take video and produce video and audio, plus the branding, the processing and all that kind of stuff. And we looked into, so we came up with that plan. And there are other elements to it as well. I don't want to talk about all of it right now. I will sort of talk about it over the coming months because we'll be releasing the software itself. But there's a few other particularly unique parts to it, particularly based around seasons-based podcasting or seasons-based video or blogging as well, and how you can use that in your content too. Because that's something that I've talked about a lot too that really resonates with people. So I wanted to tie that into the app as well. So there's more coming, but that's the basic premise, is that it's going to take your video or your audio and produce stuff for you automatically. So first step with that was funding, really. We talked a little bit about funding already, talked about the smart funding that we sourced last time around. So we managed to get that, and that really enabled me to look at a lot of different options. We didn't have to totally bootstrap this. We got a little bit of extra support, and that came to the first barrier there, which was looking towards employing an agency, really. So my first thought actually was to look at universities, because that's kind of my background, really. There's a lot of research-based agencies, research-based universities that look at audio, but also have little teams that develop software as well. One of these particularly is University of West Scotland, and I talked to them for a little while. I ended up not going that way because I found that, and this is from my history in universities as well, is that universities tend to move pretty slowly. They're not exactly what you would call agile. I don't know what your experience of colleges as well was, or Abertay as well with the university there. Is that your experience of higher education?
Yeah, of all places, yes. There's not a lot of people in big institutions like that who I think want to take responsibility for anything, so yeah. Things get passed on and nobody really wants to make a decision on anything. Well,
yeah, and even because it's such a massive organization, it's quite difficult to get stuff done. And even when you do find great staff that do want to get stuff done, and there's plenty of them in universities, great lecturers, great staff that want to achieve things, they're just faced with this massive bureaucracy. And so I found that a little bit when I was talking to universities, and so I moved away from that straight away towards agencies. Now, I found with agencies, they actually, surprisingly, I thought, you know, top tech agencies would be much more agile, much more quick moving, but actually, I found some of the bigger agencies, for a start, very, very expensive, because they have to have big teams behind it to keep their quality high, to make sure they're putting through, top quality, very quickly, quality controlled, all that kind of stuff. So very expensive in the first place, and also not very agile at all either. They tend to take quite a few weeks to, you know, just get little things done because it has to go through so many different people. So then I started looking at smaller agencies, more up-and-coming agencies, and I found one particular one, actually, which I worked with for a little while. And they were great, actually, in that we did some prototyping, we did some wireframes, and they were great for scoping the app out. But again, they were a bit more agile, but they were still a little bit, I mean, they're working for other people as well. They're not dedicated to you, so they have to work around deadlines. And this app, I felt, was going to be quite research-based. It's quite experimental. It's not like I can just give them a spec and say, go away for a month and build this. It was going to have to be a lot of back and forth, a lot of decisions. And every time I would ask them to make a decision or make a decision myself, pass it on to them, it would take quite a while to get that sorted out because, it would have to go through their processes, or they would have to book in some time next week to look at it and review it and get back to me, because they're working with other people. So understandable. So it's just not agile enough for me. And also the whole time I just had this thought, we're not building capacity here. We're not building long term. We're going to do a job with them. They're not going to be that invested in it. They want to do a good job, but they're not going to be so invested in it, and they're going to leave, and then we're going to be stuck with it. So I'm going to end up needing staff eventually anyway. So why not take the plunge and actually just do that right now? So that's where we're at right now. I took on a back-end developer about 2 months ago, just part-time, so he's working with another company already, but he had a couple of days to spare. So he's now building a fast and rough and ready prototype, that minimum viable product that people talk about in SaaS. So a first thing to start testing it out. And I'm looking for a front-end developer right now as well to start building a really slick, nice interface for this, especially the editing elements. They're going to need a quite heavy interactive interface design. So working with him right now, looking for a front-end dev, and basically just trying to look at a much more rough and ready, quick, iterative, testing all the time process to get through to a prototype that we can then give to people and just start using it with users. And I'm really pleased with it so far. It's I'm finding it hard figuring out all the server stuff, like looking at AWS and all the different servers we need to work with. Going back and forth, lots of tests, finding time for testing is actually pretty difficult. And there's loads of issues in there around like the size of video files and working with audio files and uploading through the browser, the mobile phone, all that kind of stuff, all this fun stuff. But we can talk about more about that over the coming months while this progresses. But that's the stage we're up to now. Working with a back-end dev who's employed part-time, looking for a front-end dev to employ full-time, and the two of them, I'm going to build it out. I realise that there's risks here. We're not going to have the same level of quality control. We're not going to have the same diversity of skills as if we worked with an agency, but I felt like it was worth sacrificing those elements to build our own team, even if it takes us a bit longer, even if there's a few mistakes along the way. Take me learning how to manage a software project in the first place. I've never done that before in my life. So there's going to be a few mistakes, but I think it's worth it to be able to build that capacity within our own team. So that's where we're up to right now. And I'm looking forward to sharing a bit more about that with you over the coming months as that develops. We're hoping to get a beta out over the summer for you guys to try out. So I'm going to recruit some podcast listeners, some video watchers, some of our existing audience to try out for us and see what everybody thinks. So yeah, we'll update you with that at the time. So that ties up the story. That ties up the backstory. So now I'm really looking forward to getting on to actually the day-to-day stuff, which you can get a lot more involved with. Manuel.
He's a new guy. Buenos dias.
Yeah, where you can get more involved. So yeah, I think next episode you've got to do an update of your last week so you can speak for 90% of the time, unlike what I've been doing the last few weeks.
Yeah, a day in the life of me. That'll excite the listener.
Hey, there's more exciting. It's more exciting than your average job by a long shot.
Yeah. I just thought you meant going home at night and putting my slippers on.
Looking after the rabbits.
Sitting on the couch, yeah. I don't actually sit on the couch. Maybe I could talk about that.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Intriguing. We'll leave that as a cliffhanger.
Yeah, leave it.
Matthew
leave it
does not sit on a couch.
I have to now come up with a reason why.
Breaking news. Okay, so that ties up the story. Next week, we'll be on to the week-by-week updates. Look forward to it. Alrighty, time for the data behind the story. This is the bit you always love, Matthew, isn't it? The numbers.
Love a bit of data.
Love a bit of the numbers, the stats. You do a lot of our stats, though. You actually track a lot of our KPIs.
I do.
Yeah, yeah. You enjoy that or you hate it?
No, I do find it interesting. Yeah, it's good to see when I check the affiliate money that I've still got a job. Because there's always that wee risk where it's like, all right, well, I'll just get my jacket on.
It's just disappeared yet.
So far, so good.
So far, so good.
If this podcast stops going out, if it just pod fades, that's probably what's happened.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, affiliates just disappeared. We can't afford this anymore. But it's when you have a hand in it, when you can affect it. Like, just you see the stuff, like the content you're putting out, the podcast, the blogs, everything that you're putting out, especially the affiliate based articles that you put out, like reviews of equipment, roundups, that kind of stuff. Like, you're affecting those numbers.
I know. I did. Amazon, I've totally changed the layout, the report structure.
Right.
There will be still a way to look through all the different sales.
Yeah.
But I've not, like, the last few times I've done it, it's just taken the total.
Yeah, yeah.
But I did like to scroll through and see, especially if I just put a review out.
See what
like,
was selling.
Did anyone actually buy it?
Yep, yep.
It's always good to know that someone's... taking your word for something.
Yeah, someone trusts you.
Yeah. So, they've changed it all in there. It's horrible.
Yeah, yeah.
But then stuff, you know, if you use a service all the time and they change it, even if they make it better, it's horrible to
you still
because
hate it.
It's...
Yeah. It's actually, I quite like it. I've used it for the .com when the American ones changed a while back, and yeah, I've got used to it now, and it is quite good. You still can find those reports. I'll show you later on. So yeah,
be good.
But anyway, to our stats. So I mentioned last week that we're going to go on to a cycling, sort of 4 week cycling. Makes me think I want to go cycling. A cycle of 4 week reports. So we're not going to do all of the stats every single time. We track four different types of KPIs within the business. We've got our web stats, we've got our income, we've got our email signups, our email opt-ins, how well our email marketing's performing, basically. And we've got our content output, so how much we're putting out there and what effect that's having on the traffic. So if I was to do that all of them every single week, I would get pretty onerous. So what we're going to do is do one of them each week in a cycle. So we'll do web stats, then income, then email opt-ins, that type of stuff. And also, it just gives more to report. There's not actually that much of a change week by week, but month by month is a much better trend. So this time around, it's income. And I've just done my monthly financial reporting and all that caper, so I've got all the stats here. So let you know how we're doing right now in terms of income. So at the moment, let's go through the different categories. We've got clients first. So I mentioned in the story for this week that we still do keep on a few clients and we still do some one-off projects. I hinted at the kind of those bigger one-off projects. Examples of that could be, for example, a charity in Edinburgh we're working with just now to create a podcast-based course. So they're actually creating a course that needs to be really simple. It's aimed at an older generation of workers. So most of them will be 40s, 50s or older. So not to say that nobody of that age can handle technology, but the level of literacy tends to be a bit lower. So we're making it really simple in that it's just delivered by email and they click a link and go and listen to a podcast. So they've got a couple of nice bits of media to consume. So that's a project we're working on just now, just a one-off chunk of work. And that type of project we tend to charge. I mean, we only take those types of things on if it's in the minimum of maybe £2,000 to £3,000 range. So $3,000 to $4,000. And that one, especially because it's an ongoing one as well. Another one, for example, is a business support organisation within a university, actually. They're looking to get us to do four. In fact, I've maybe not even told you about this yet, Matthew.
First to me, you know.
Yeah, totally. So that's someone who's going to get us to do a really highly produced set of interviews to advertise their support. And it's, I say advertise, but it's free. Like the support they offer is free. So it's actually just to showcase the type of stuff they do, to talk to people that have used it before. So do some case studies. We're going to interview maybe four or five people that have gone through the program and produce that as a set of really good podcasts that will, you know, showcase what they do. They can put it out as marketing material, put it out as a podcast as well. Hopefully it'll turn into a more regular thing. But that's kind of the one-off type of client work we take on now, because it's interesting, it's fun, it's also much higher value because we're putting a lot more work into it than the standard just week by week stuff. So with client work, we've not got any of them coming in this month. So right now with our kind of standard client work, it's just above £400 a month, $500 or so. So that's a nice little baseline. Pays for a wee chunk of Matthew's production wages when he's working on them. So it's good to have that as a regular recurring income. Always nice to have that coming in. Membership is growing steadily just now. So we're getting maybe a couple of people a week coming into the membership right now on average. It tends to be in spurts. It doesn't tend to be like two per week. It tends to be dependent on emails I'm sending out, that type of stuff. Maybe we get four or five one week and then none for a few weeks. But right now, it's probably an average of about two a week. And that's up to about £350, $450 per month right now. We're looking at, what we've got, about 25 members right now. So I'm hoping to, by the end of this year, grow that up to, what was the last number? I think I was looking at maybe coming on for a couple of hundred by the end of this year. I would call that a success for the membership if we can get it up to a couple of hundred by the end of this year. Then on to affiliate. So affiliate is still our kind of our biggest income right now. And there's been a bit of a drop in the last month. You've spotted that in your weekly reporting, haven't you?
It's a nervous time.
It is. There was a week about 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago now, where basically it went from, there's a graph it shows you in the Amazon affiliate. If you've not seen it, there's a graph where it'll show you day by day income. And we have generally, you know, we're looking at about a bit over $100 a day in terms of affiliate income. or it hovers around that area. And we had 100, 120, 90, 110, blah, blah, blah. And then suddenly it dropped down to about 20. And then the next day was 25, and the next day was 15, and the next day was like 30. So it was hovering around there. And I was like, that's when I started looking at it every single day. This is the reason that it's terrible relying on affiliate income, because it's so unreliable. It can just change day to day based on search, based on algorithm changes, based on, you know, the affiliate program itself. They can shut down or they can change their terms. And I think this is what's happened. I'd read that Amazon have changed their commission structure on some of the categories.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it affects our audio stuff directly, but a lot of our income isn't to do with audio equipment, is it?
Yeah, you get like really eclectic products in there,
yes,
that somebody's just been shopping about, you know.
Yeah.
Bought a king size bed and a blue snowball. The two go together, obviously. But a lot of the big purchases are just like random things.
Someone clicks through for a mic but goes, oh, well, I do need to buy this though. Someone different. I think the best one I saw once was there was one purchase next to each other. It was a set of lingerie and a video, the topic of which I won't name, but I'm sure you can imagine the topic given that it was next to a lingerie purchase. And it's like, well, it's nice to know that, you know, we earn a wee commission off somebody having a good night in.
They're having more fun than me at night.
Oh, Matthew. Yeah,
Julia doesn't listen to this show, as far as I know. So
yeah, she's going to start listening. You'll get slapped for that. Exactly. So it doesn't matter. Even if Amazon changes something to do with their book structure, even though we're in audio, it still affects us a little bit. So there has been a drop. Thankfully, it went up again. So we're back up to similar levels, a wee bit below. But this month, we were on, this last month, so that was March, we were on about £2,800, or about $4,000 in total from affiliate. It's not just Amazon, but all of it together. The majority of it's Amazon. That's our kind of biggest affiliate program. So that's why it's kind of nerve-wracking when Amazon do things and change things, because it can change our income quite drastically. So I think it's probably mostly that. A nice motorbike going outside.
You bought it on the affiliate program.
Indeed, yeah, hopefully. Yeah. it changes that quite drastically. I think it was probably partly conversions are down a little bit. I'm not sure if March is maybe a bad month for buying. I looked back to last year, actually, and there was quite a chunky drop in April last year.
Mm.
So I'm not sure whether springtime, actually, it's just people are kind of, they keep spending in January, February after Christmas to make themselves feel better. But then in March, April, they're like, holy crap, we've spent a lot of money in the last few months.
Yeah.
Because Christmas through.
December, understandably, like, was through the roof.
Yeah.
It got to the point where, you know, we're walking about in tuxedos.
Yeah.
And then January, I think you still get that, you know, people have got their Christmas money and also they're depressed and they're spending, but they get to February and they're like, okay, that's enough of that now.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, so that maybe spills over into March, April. So anyway, it's hard to tell exactly why these changes happen, which is another of the frustrating things about affiliate revenue. But we look into it, we're trying to diversify. So that was something that we're working on just now, is diversifying our affiliate income. For example, within Amazon, for example, we're trying to get outside of just our mics and mixers and things. We're doing some articles on headphones right now, some more consumer-based stuff. I did an article on standing desks recently because that's something I use. So it's just looking at other products, diversifying a bit, and other niches as well. So you're putting together a production services, what would you call it, directory, I suppose, at the moment. So listing all of the different production services out there. And that's partly because we don't do it anymore, so we've got people to pass it to, so we can answer that question. But also because it's a good way to generate affiliate, like referring to other services. Similar with courses too. You've put together a courses page as well, haven't you?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
You looked around to find like some good affiliate ones there. So we're looking for good quality ones. And you could perceive this as competition, but really our job, and I see our job being to give the best answer to people who are podcasters out there asking a question, and we'll tell them about our service, so our membership. But I mean, our membership is really kind of a, It's a good quality upgrade for courses and services, and it's for courses and resources and how to and to access us. But there's tons of other stuff out there that would help people as well. And our membership's quite low cost, so people can afford other stuff alongside it. So we want to direct people to everything that is good quality out there that can help a podcaster. And we believe that, you know, well, I mean, that generates us more traffic, which helps with our sponsorship, with our affiliate income, but it'll come back to us in terms of membership and people buying our SaaS product and stuff like that in the future.
Mm-hmm.
I believe, you know, I hope.
Yeah, that's the theory.
That's content marketing. So yeah, that's the stats for this week. Still doing reasonably well. Income took a bit of a drop in March compared to February because of that affiliate, but still can afford to keep the office, still can afford to pay ourselves, so doing all right. So yeah, that's the income this week. Next week, we'll be looking at email marketing. So in terms of our list size, our list growth, how it's all performing, we'll go into all the details on that next time around. In the lesson segment of the show, I wanted to go through, well, the main thing I think that comes from the story this time around is around starting off the software project. So it's around how we thought about that. And I'm not sure, did I tell you, like, talk to you much about it? I can't even remember, really.
We had the odd conversation about it. I don't know, like, massive amounts about it.
Yeah,
I do know what's been going on, I think.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, but it was that choice, I think, yeah, between agency and employees.
Yeah, like for anyone listening then that wanted to do what we did and they were sort of looking at, should I take somebody on or should I go an agency? Like what sort of things did you really learn from it? What would you advise on that?
Yeah, the reason I was wanting to go with an agency in the first place was because there was two or three reasons at least. One of which was that I've never done software development in my life, like manage a project like that. So I wasn't sure if I took on an employee, whether I would know what to look for in terms of quality, to be able to find the right person, or even when they're doing the work, like how I would manage the process of them doing that work. Like how would I make sure they're doing it right? How would I check it? All the quality assurance, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just, I thought that my plan had been to take on an agency, work with them for maybe 6 months. They would get us up and running. I would learn a bit about the process. I would learn how they do it. They would teach me, you know, they could get started in a minimum quality level, I suppose. Like they would make sure it's, you know, we take on an agency, they would make sure it's good. When I say it, I just, it makes me realize it was a fear thing, I suppose, in the first place. It was just a fear that if I took on one person, it's relying on that one person. I could take on a crappy employee and then the whole thing's kind of wrecked. But then the same applies to an agency, I discovered. Like I talked to probably five or six different ones over that time, and the quality of them varied massively. Even if they're the best intentioned and actually pretty good skill, then it can still screw up just because miscommunication, or they just don't have enough time to take it on at that moment and it's not their fault or something. I don't know, there's plenty of factors in there that made me realize over the months that actually an agency isn't as foolproof. I think that was the thing. So I thought it would be foolproof. It'd be the safest method, mm-hmm. even though it costs more. So it's worth the extra money to make sure that it works, to make sure everything works okay. But actually I realized, having met agencies, that they're as fallible as any staff member. And the downsides are that they cost a lot more and they're not building capacity in your own team, and they're not going to invest in the product half as much. And, you know, they're never going to become a full-time member that helps you create and iterate and really evolve the product over time. So that's how I came down to working with an employee. I thought it's worth the risk, even if I don't know how it works, even if I'm not sure how to manage a software project, I need to figure it out, because actually, ultimately, long-term, that's what we're going to be doing. And it's just down to find the right person. So I suppose that's part of it, is if you need something done relatively quickly, making sure it's, you know, really... I think probably if you put a lot of money into it, you take an expensive agency, then actually probably the safety checks are good, as in it will be good quality, it will be done on time, it will be, you know, you're much safer with that than an employee, but it costs so much more, it's so much less agile, you can't take user feedback and build that right into the process, because they'll have already planned it all out for the month or 2 months or whatever. So that's a bit of a rambly answer, I suppose, but that's kind of what I took from it, I think. Yeah, I mean, if you want to build something, if you want to build a soft piece of software long term, I think you need staff, so you need to jump in sooner or later. That's what I learned, I guess. So yeah, I hope that was useful.
Yeah,
slightly rambly, but hey.
Getting another member of staff in, it'll make our Christmas party more exciting.
Indeed,
it's just been us two walking about for the last couple of years. So if we get a third person in there,
yeah, we need to get, because it is a bigger team than that. We need to get the people that are remote. Like, we get Judy across from abroad.
Yeah,
we get
it's a long train.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Or some of the folk. Yeah. Anyway, we could bring everyone together, but no, that'd be good. Okay. Well, that ties up the lessons for this week. Let's move on to the next section. All right, on to the experiment segment for this week. And as you know, we're continuing on with the email opt-ins work that we started a few weeks back. Five weeks? What were we, episode five? Yeah, five, no, four, the five, yes, 5 weeks ago. So we've gone through a few different things so far. We have designed our first custom lead magnet. We have implemented that on the site. One of your tasks was to create a little A-B test on that lead magnet. So put it onto a particular page, try a couple of different headlines, see what types of things resonate with your audience. Then we got you to sign up to an email provider, which was, in our case, that'd be ConvertKit, but you can use any of the other ones out there. There's MailChimp is a nice free one to start off with. So you've got ActiveCampaign or AWeber or lots of different ones out there. And then we went on to creating a welcome sequence as well. So creating your first three emails that people get when they sign up, and that goes out to them and starts to, you know, get them into your way of thinking, tells you a bit about them, a bit about you, tells them a bit about you, indoctrination, they call it, but it's not a very nice word. So maybe getting to know them, that's what we should call it. And then finally, we installed we talked to you about the software itself. So SumoMe is the software we were using. And the reason I came to that last, even though it was out of order, is because that kind of relates to something that is going to round out this test, which is that I hate SumoMe now.
I'm just laughing at your notes. It just says SumoMe farce. And I did see that you'd tweeted them.
Yeah.
I was having a wee laugh because it's one of the things that it's like, you never like to do it, do you? To tweet somebody and call them out. You were really nice about it, but I did it with Adobe Edition once. Yeah. I'm like, look, I've just had enough of this. But you're trying to be like, thanks for your help, but you know, this really is the honest.
It's not working. You know what? I'll do this with a qualifier, because I do like, I love Noah Kagan's company. I love the work that they do. Like, most of the stuff that they do is brilliant. And in fact, I've used the SumoMe plugin for probably 2 years now, and it's been great. It's the set of tools that they've put out there for the price that they sell it for, I think is really good. But they've really messed up this upgrade. They've gone from the old List Builder, which is the one I recommended you install a couple of weeks ago. So apologies if you've gone through the same problem. But yeah,
never listen again.
Exactly, never trust this again. So List Builder has been upgraded to List Builder 3, I think they call it. I never saw List Builder 2, I don't think. But anyway, apparently that's what I was using. And it's just completely changed, which, fair enough, you have to upgrade software, you have to change, you have to move with the times, improve things. And like you said earlier in the show, actually, it doesn't matter if it's improved. You always hate the new system, don't you?
Yeah, so, we hate change.
Yeah, exactly. But it's not that. It's they've changed a lot of stuff. And the main problem is that all of my pop-ups and all of my campaigns have been completely messed up. So you can import pop-ups. So I can bring in some of my old pop-ups, but you can't work with them half as well. You can't put them into campaigns half. Well, okay, right, I'll start from the start. They've changed it from campaigns, which was the old method of doing A-B testing, where you could just create four or five pop-ups, put them into a campaign, and basically have them all compete. So you've got all these pop-ups. They've changed it now to tests, whereby you get a pop-up and you create a variation of it. And that variation isn't then listed in your list of pop-ups. It's just in the test itself. And that's confusing in the first place. That wasn't intuitive in any way. And I couldn't figure out how this was working. And the only way I figured it out was by back and forth, five emails over maybe 4 or 5 days with one of the support techs, because they haven't put any documentation up there either. So no documentation for a completely new, different system. I mean, that's just not on. I lost probably about a week's worth of opt-ins, because Partly because I upgraded it and hadn't realized that it was going to take, excuse me, take a lot of work to make it work. So I needed to budget in like half a day to transfer it all over. And I didn't have half a day for a few days. It was, I mean, there's a lot of stuff to do. So it took me 3 or 4 days to get to it in the first place to look at it. So I'd lost all of those days. Then it turned out that it was a bunch of stuff I didn't understand. So I look up the documentation. There's no documentation. So I can't do anything. So I send an email off to help. And of course, they're pretty responsive. He got back to me within 24 hours. But I mean, that's a long time to wait for a response. And it wasn't, it didn't answer my question entirely. All credit to him, he tried, but didn't answer it. So 3 or 4 more emails before I actually got an answer and got it up and running again. But I mean, the campaigns are all gone as well. So we'd been running all these tests for this podcast specifically, and they're all gone. I can't see the stats on any of them. You can't, like, you transfer it over, you transfer the pop-ups, but the campaigns don't come in because that system's completely changed, and you can't see the stats from the old campaigns. You can't even look back at a legacy version so that you can see it. It's just, it was a farce. Just like, yeah, I've written it, notes here. And I'm sorry to say that, because I do really like the work that Sumo do, and I'm sure it's just a blip. I'm sure it was just really excited about getting this new product out there, and they've rushed it, they've done something, but anyway, it doesn't help much now. So apologies if you've gone through that too, but it also means that our experiment here is a little bit squee-whiff. But eventually the support tech did get me my stats, so he could look back into the legacy and tell me the stats, at least, even if I do have to rebuild every single blooming campaign that I ever created. So anyway, that means let's go to the stats. I'll report back on it. So remember, we changed to the generic ebook across the entire site, just to give us a baseline for our opt-ins. So on the equipment pages, it was opting in at 1.4%. So that's pretty low. Generic ebook, that's all it is. If you're looking at equipment, you probably know how to podcast, so makes sense. 1.4%. The Skype pages too, you're probably a good bit along the way if you're looking at... well, maybe that's not true. Recording Skype, that's kind of a beginner question as well, isn't it? 1.2% opt-in for that, and a 0.7% opt-in for all the fiction pages.
Those fictioners.
Yeah. But yeah, that kind of makes sense, because they're here to know the best fiction articles. And in all the other ones, so a lot of beginners articles, a lot of general articles, they are the best by far at 2.3. So I'm seeing that as our kind of baseline opt-in, 2.3. As the kind of highest end. But if we can improve that on our equipment pages, the equipment pages are the most popular by far. So if we can put in a lead magnet that gets above 1.4, then that would be great. But the kit bag was meant to be that.
Yeah.
The kit bag, you can probably see the number on the screen in front of
nobody
us.
Nobody cares, 0.4.
0.4%.
Nobody wants to know that I like the Samsung Q2U.
Exactly. I genuinely thought that would work really well.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, people are looking up a microphone article. They're trying to find out what the best microphones in the world are, the best mixers in the world. If I was looking for that kind of stuff and somebody said, here's what is in my, here's the stuff I would dream about getting, the best stuff out there, I thought that would go down well. Maybe we've just got the title wrong, headline. Like, I'm not sure.
Maybe we just need somebody more credible than me to write it.
It's yourself, maybe. So, well, I'm going to have to go back to the drawing board on that one. Skype checklist. So, giving people a Skype checklist to follow up on Skype articles did a lot better than the kit bag, but only just better than the generic pop-up. So, the generic one was 1.2. The Skype checklist was 1.5. So, a bit of an improvement. We could probably improve that with working on the headlines, working on a bit of the messaging around it. So you're getting there. And the fiction articles were opting in at 1.4. So that was a how to create a fiction podcast book on the fiction podcast articles. So pretty poor all around, to be honest.
Yeah, well, the only way is up, I suppose.
Yeah. But, I mean, I could, if it was just one we were trying, I could say, well, maybe we've screwed up and not given them what they want, or bad headlines, or bad product, or whatever. But across four different things, it shows me that there's a lot of people talk about content upgrades being this panacea where, like, that's what, like, doubles your opt-in rate. You go from whatever you're on just now, you know, you get 5, 6, 7, 10% opt-in rates just by doing a custom lead magnet. But this has just shown me that one of a couple of things. Either it just doesn't work for everyone. The gurus will tell you something, but it just, you know, it applies to their sites sometimes. You'll read something online which is like, this is going to fix everything, but more often than not, these things are really specific to a particular audience, a particular niche, a particular topic. So always need to test these things yourself. We'll keep trying different ones, but it does make me think that it's a lot harder to create an effective content upgrade. And you might as well actually spend time creating more, maybe more general ones as well, because that's what's working best for us right now. So maybe a slight negative at the end of that experiment run, but that's kind of what it's here for. It's to test these methods that people claim work really well, see if they work for us, see a few different methods, which hopefully will pass on some knowledge to yourselves to try it out, whether you should just forget about it altogether or whether there's just particular ways you should test it for your own topic. So what I'd recommend is definitely try one. For your most popular article, that's what we recommended at the start. Try and create a custom lead magnet for your most popular article and test it out. But don't see it as a panacea. Don't start putting so much work into these, because from what I've seen, they don't work as well as people claim. Now for the action of the week. This is your homework, as usual. Did you do your homework last week, Matthew?
Well, I think the dog ate it. Oh. I don't have a dog.
Very unreal. Your rabbit ate it.
Yeah.
I'm not sure rabbits eat computers. Right, so this, to tie up this, I'm coming off, if you're watching the videos, go back and check the last report and experiment. You'll see that we didn't see that custom lead magnets worked as well as we hoped. But what I would say is that even if you're doing generic generic lead magnets, like our How to Podcast book, which, you know, applies to basically anything on our site, it's a lead magnet that will be at least semi-relevant to every single person that visits your site. Even if you're doing them, then A/B testing and experimenting with a lot of the variables around that pop-up is still well worth it. So this applies whether you're doing those custom lead magnets like we were trying out and found didn't work as well as they should have, or whether you're doing more generic opt-ins, then this is still relevant. So what I want to do is recommend a few different types of A/B tests, just to finish us off here. So you've already created an A/B test in, I think it was the second week or the first week we looked at that. So you already tried out a couple of variations of headline. So I hope that gave you some insights into how different it can be. Like, you can have one that's at 2% and one at 1% just through a few different words. It's amazing the difference it makes. So if you edited the headline last time around, try a few things. Here's some things that we found make a big difference. So image versus no image. You automatically think, well, I did automatically think that having an image of the ebook or the download or the resource or whatever it is on the pop-up will make it look better because it looks a bit flashier, draw the eye. But actually, we tested it and a few of our pop-ups perform much better without an image. Just text, headline, text, and email box at the bottom. So try that. Try one pop-up with an image and the exact same text but without the image on another one and see how that affects it. Another one could be, obviously, try some more different headlines. So try 4 or 5 different headlines. Try really different variations, like really mix it up, all sorts of different ways. I mean, you can go from anything from the, you know, total BuzzFeed style, like 9 best ways to lose your hair or something, you know, the silly, like, really sort of hype worthy ones. Some of them actually work quite well. It depends on the audience hugely, but it's what all these things are worth testing just to try them out. Another thing we found work in a way that wasn't expected was short text versus long text. So I always assumed that if I was doing a pop-up, I should try and cut the text down as much as possible because a big block of text is not going to work very well. But I actually tried same headline on 2 different pop-ups, same image, and just changed the body text. One was just 1 paragraph, one was about 3 or 4 paragraphs, given a bit more detail. And the long one won out by a long shot. That was actually one of the biggest differences we found. So long text versus short text. Again, it'll be totally audience dependent, but try it out, give it a go. So yeah, there's a few different ways. That's a few different things to try. I mean, some people go to as much detail as like different coloured buttons, different coloured headlines, that kind of stuff. I think you're probably getting a bit too granular by that point. It's mainly about the content. So the image, the headline, the body text, maybe the button text actually as well. So what you put on the button itself can make a bit of a difference as well, whether that speaks to your audience or not and persuades them just to do that final click. So give that a shot. Try out as many different ones as you can. I tend to test maybe 3 or 4 at a time. So I'll have a campaign, I'll have an A-B test, which isn't just A or B, it'll be A, B, C or D. And then maybe I'll narrow it down to the two that are leading and let them run for another week and see which one wins out of them. So you can try more than just one at a time. And try them in different categories of your site as well to see what resonates in different areas, because there'll be different types of people finding different categories and different sections of your site as well. So now that you've got that system set up, at least, I mean, it's there, it's ready to use. If you're still on SumoMe, I hope you can use the new tests version. You'll need to figure it out. I'm sure they'll have created some documentation by the time you come to it here, so hope it's a bit clearer on how to use it by now. But anyway, if there's one thing I've found out, it's the fact that, you know, you'll be told something by the gurus, you'll be read something on a website, and they'll say it as if it's a universal truth, but it doesn't matter what anybody says online. Your audience is your audience. Your audience is unique, and you need to find out what resonates with them in terms of all the different variables of how you do your website. So I think that'll tie up the action, and I hope that has been a useful experiment to follow along with as well. I hope you've gone through the actions on the last 4 or 5 episodes. I managed to get a few different things set up. If you didn't already do email at all, then hopefully that got you got you started. But even if you were doing a bit of email, hope the A-B tests have helped you out a little bit. And I'd love to hear. So get in touch. Send us an email into info@thepodcasthost.com, or you can tweet us at @thepodcasthost on Twitter. I'd love to hear how it's working for you, whether you followed it along. Let me know the results. We'll see if it worked for you. Well, that does it for another episode of The Numbers Game.
And we are episode 5. What's it they say, if you get to 7?
7, yeah, that's the average, isn't it?
Yeah.
Supposedly.
And of course, we've got 8 weeks to getting you noteworthy. Don't really, but...
Yeah. Well, that's one of those, this show is a bit of a bit about the stats, a lot about the stats. I wonder where people got that stat from. Where do you think that 7-episode thing came from?
Don't know, actually.
I think somebody just made it up. I've never seen a source for it.
Sometimes if you just say a stat with confidence,
yes.
If you made it up, people will just copy it. I might just start doing that. It's the era of, what did they call it? The end of truth or something like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, aye, fake news and all that.
It's fair game now.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's a lot of that out there, actually. There's some... You get it a bit. So doing research training, doing a PhD, you kind of get taught some of this stuff. And there's a few good case studies out there. Like, I wonder if I can bring any to mind right now. There was one particular one where people... What was it now? I can't remember off the top of my head. I'll maybe put it in show notes for anybody that's interested. But there's a particular stat that people talk about. And it is really, really well known. But it's apparently that one guy tried to find out where it came from. And it's like a... It's not a scientific thing either, it's a universal thing, and it's really well known. And he looked back, and it was just one guy just said it based on absolutely nothing, just like you say. And it was quoted a few times, and it just proliferated from there.
Yeah.
It happens. Was it 76% of all stats are made up?
It might be that. But if you just say something with conviction.
Yeah, with conviction, then... a bit of confidence. Cool. Okay, well, let's tie it up. If you want to see the show notes, go to numbersgame.me/005 and you'll see the show notes there. We're trying to make the show notes as comprehensive as possible. You'll see that there's a full summary of the contents of the episode. So if you want to go back and review some of the material, some of the learning, some of the lessons, it's all on there. And you'll see the videos there too. So if you're listening to the podcast, I encourage you to go over and just, if you want to review anything, go back and look at anything again. The videos are all on the website at numbersgame.me/005 they're all on YouTube as well. So subscribe to our channel on YouTube. You can go to youtube.com and just search for The Numbers Game. Other than that, again, feedback, as always, get in touch, info@thepodcasthost.com, tweet us @thepodcasthost. And it's early days. You mentioned new noteworthy jokingly there, but It does make a wee bit of a difference,
maybe,
doesn't it?
Maybe we will get
a small difference. So yeah, if you can give us a review, that'd be much appreciated. If you're enjoying what we're doing, pop onto iTunes, find us on there, The Numbers Game, and give us a wee review. That'd be most excellent. Other than that, any parting words, Matthew?
Take care of yourself, eat your breakfast, because I don't care what all these millionaires say, you know, people that make loads of money.
Yeah.
You look at me, I've got like a couple of hundred in the bank and a house in Fife that I don't own. So who are you going to trust?
Yeah.
The man who eats his breakfast.
Well, with those words, we shall see you on the next episode.